Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hello, we are back again after a weekend marred by judging decisions. We are back, the Eurobash duo. It's me and Niall McGrath, as always, live in your ears and in your minds. How are you, Niall McGrath?
Worst intro ever.
Listen, mate.
Good, man.
Listen, my back is killing me from carrying you, but thank you anyway, all right?
All right.
You're welcome.
Jesus. That's not a very positive manner to start the show
off. You're the one criticizing my fantastic intros.
It's a terrible intro.
I just like to get the ball rolling so we can get down to the business.
All right, fair enough.
I don't like this, and it's a lovely windy day here in Dublin, that kind of shite. Fuck off, nobody cares. So we had great coverage all week at UFC 247, our fantastic team, Esther, Casey, Jose, Alex, making our debut on camera. Fair play, Alex. A legend. Cool Alex, as you know, in our circles. We have a new government in Ireland on the way, apparently, after our general election. Mad L weekend full of that. Did you vote?
Yeah, I did.
I did as well, yeah. It's mad. It's a mad scene, isn't it?
I'm worried about the future of our country, if I'm being honest, mate. I'm not going to lie about that.
Well, to be honest with you, I've never been secure about the future of our country, so it's just a different kind of dynamic. Let's see how this ball gets rolling, I suppose.
Nothing's going to change. It never does.
Apart from we might not be here anymore. We might leave the country. But, a bit of a mad L weekend, all right. Let's get on with the latest news, because we got a huge, huge list of guests again. We have for the first time ever, we have an active UFC champion on the show. We have Valentina Shevchenko, fresh off her title defense against Caitlin Chukagian. An absolute masterclass again.
Is that a first?
That's the first active champion. We've had a few champions on, but never someone holding the belt.
Is that true? That surprises me.
I know it does, because we always have amazing guests. Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe, but I'm afraid it's
true.
All
right, okay, yeah. Just...
We also have Nathaniel Wood, who was taking on John Dodson. After 11 months on the sideline, he's coming back and fighting the toughest assignment of his life in Rio Rancho. You hear from Nathaniel later, he believes a win over John Dodson will unlock the top 10 for him. And it's hard to argue against that after Peter Yan and guys had their careers absolutely leap. I don't know, how would you say, their careers took flame once they bet John Dodson.
Propelled.
Propelled is the word I was definitely looking for. Leah McCourt will be on as well to speak about her historic main event at Bellator Dublin following the injury of James Gallagher. And of course, we'll be joined by Ross Houston as well, who last week it was revealed that he has been released by Cage Warriors and has vacated that welterweight title. Reese McKee will now fight for that welterweight title on May 16th in Belfast. Even though I've gone through most of the headlines already now, I should probably do it again. A back injury has forced James Gallagher out of his main event bout with Kyle Eleanor. What I'm hearing is that fight could be earmarked for a co-main event in a Bellator London later on this year. Liam McCourt v Judith Ruiz now moved to the main event. The first time a huge promotion like this has had a female main event in Ireland, so a very big deal for Leah. Richard Coyley's also been added to card. He'll take on George Hardwick. Coyley, of course, coming back from that loss against MVP. Richie Smullen has a new opponent. He'll now take on Albert Diaz. He was initially meant to fight Ranjit Barrier. Dylan Logan also has a new opponent. He'll take on Callum Murray. Tom Mearns has been ruled out of that fight, from what I'm hearing, and I saw an interview with Tom actually with UK MMA and Katie Hunter, where he said Bellator asked him basically to lose to get a GP to sign off on him making featherweight, which is pretty impossible, I'd imagine, in this part of the world. But you can imagine that he's not too happy about that. But that is the way the cookie crumbles, unfortunately. It's going to be very hard for anything other than a medical practitioner to sign off on that.
Jesus.
As we said, Ross Houston has vacated on the title and has been released from Cage Warriors. Rhys McKee now fights for the title in Belfast in May. Another one here, Noel, interesting. RCC hosting a Road to PFL event in Russia on Feb 22nd. It's part of their European or global expansion, should I say. So the winner will go through and fight in the PFL, which is quite interesting. But that's all the headlines. I thought we should talk about last week because... we were hoping to have a bit of news on the podcast last week, weren't we?
Yeah, we did. You go, oh, Jesus, some mad news here. When you got up on it obviously played out that way. I think we were pretty confident, but, you know, we don't do anything without fully getting shit over the line.
Yeah, we tried. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, big time.
Like, we really did try to get it, but, yeah, it's unfortunate, James, having to pull out, but a huge story, and then a whole avalanche of stories that day.
Yeah, we should have just done it for the crack and just see what happened, but we don't do that.
Yeah, and then I wouldn't have slept all night, but I'm texting you, do you think it's... no, I'm not able for that shit. But
yeah, listen, it's unfortunate, man. It really is. We were looking forward to that fight. It was a really good test, I think, for James, for both guys, for Cal as well, obviously, you know, putting together some really big wins, and obviously it fell out before, so really disappointing for both guys. And Leah steps up now, yeah, for Bellator. So
absolutely, we're going to talk about that a bit later because we have four guests this week. We're going to do the talking points after the first interview, but we're definitely going to get back to that. What about Ross Houston? We kind of saw this coming, right? Like it seemed like he was out of favor with Cage Warriors, or he certainly didn't seem happy based on his social media. I think it's good to just get it done, get it dealt with.
That's always the best way. We saw Robert Whiteford when he was with ACB. Yeah. How long that went on for. You know, dragged out for like 3, 4, 5, even longer months. But yeah, it's good to get this out of the way. It's good for Ross. It's good for Cage Warriors. It's unfortunate. I think it all stems back originally when Ross came out after he wasn't allowed to compete in the grappling tournament. Mm. And it's been sour grapes ever since then. And obviously they've cut a deal or something's happened there.
And everything seems like, I mean, they're all telling me it was an amicable separation. So, I mean... What? Well, Rhys McKee is going to be happy about it anyway, isn't he?
Oh, he is. He's delighted.
Holy shit.
I know you've been speaking to him. I've been speaking to him. You know, this is what Rhys has dreamt about in stage one of his progression of his career to go towards the UFC. He's turned down Bellator contracts. So he's told us. And this is what Rhys wants. So that is... you know, obviously, it's what, 99 fighters, I think, now have gone on. 96 fighters.
Sorry, 95. It's just because Morgan Charrier last week was like, I will be 96.
Okay, sorry, I'm getting confused here, right? But it is, you know, that's an incredible record that Cage Warriors have had in relationship, you know, in terms of the relationship with the UFC and producing fighters for the UFC. So, you know, you get that title and you're well on the path with the Sean Shelby and Mick Maynard having their eyes on you. So it's a huge opportunity for Rhys.
Yeah, it also adds a lot to these Irish shows that Cage Warriors are doing. That's one thing. A lot of people are like, oh, if Rhys wins in May, he's off to the UFC. Look, Cage Warriors are going to need him for those shows as well. Like, this is going to be a huge storyline now for these cards over the next year. Over 2020, it's going to be about Rhys and that title if he manages security in May. And yeah, by the end of the year, I'd expect him, if he's still holding on to that belt, he'll be signing with the big boys.
Oh, 100%, man. Like, look at the guy. He's the complete package as well, I think, in terms American, and
he's got lovely hair,
not as nice as mine, but yeah, decent hair.
I've got terrible
he's a great hair. Guy, he's good with the media, he knows how to deal with the media, he knows the right things to say, and obviously backs it up with that touch of death. So McKee is on path for the big show, no doubt, Petey.
Without further ado, let's get on with the first interview of the day. It's a great privilege for us to have Valentina Shevchenko on the show. What a legend. I think she's one of the best fighters in the world at the moment. My colleague Jed Meshew had an article out this morning lauding her as the most dominant champion in the UFC, and I agree with it, to be honest. When you think about where Valentina is and what she's doing to these contenders, she's absolutely in a class of her own. And in a class of her own on the microphone and on the phone as well, as you will hear. She's an absolute diamond. A pleasure to have her on. We'll be back in about 15 minutes to get onto these talking points. And thanks again to Valentina. And now we are joined by the UFC flyweight champion and one of the greatest fighters in the world at the moment, who just recorded another title defense against Caitlin Chookagian. It is none other than the Bullet herself, Valentina Shevchenko. And what an honor it is to be joined by you, Valentina. How happy are you with this victory in Houston, Texas?
Hello, Peter. Yes, it was good night for me. It was good, like in general, everything, training camp preparation. And of course, after the victory, it's like, it's like a happiness that you feel. And it's amazing that, like, that doesn't matter how, like, injured you are or not. If you get the victory, it's everything that really matter.
Were you carrying injuries into this fight, or were you very fit?
A very small one, you know, it's like even doesn't count. No, very small.
Right, right. And how do you celebrate a win like this? You go in, you perform so amazingly. How do you celebrate something like this?
I like to celebrate it with my friends, with my family, and I don't like the big celebration. I very like to spend like time in the probably like go to eat something, go with my family to the nature, just to take a moment and appreciate the moment, appreciate everything that was and gonna be. And I really love to spend my time in very like quiet and like nature, go to the lake. This is for me the best celebration.
Do you after a performance like that, do you feel that was a special one? Because it seems every fight you show us a new side to you. This was a very dynamic performance. Is it something like, do you get more proud of some fights compared to the other? Do you feel especially proud about this performance because it was utterly dominant?
I think that fighters, they cannot say while they are active and while they are like continue their professional career fights, they cannot say things like that they can say, okay, this is my best performance or whatever. I think when you are done already with something and you are like doing something new in your life, you can look back and say, okay, this is what I think, or this is what's the best moment. But right now it's like no time to think about this. It's still many things gonna come in the future, I hope so. And every time, of course, I'm like in my trainings everywhere, I try to make myself better version of me than I was yesterday, and this is my priority number one.
How does it feel when everybody is beginning to talk about you as the most dominant champion in the UFC? I mean, do you care about these accolades that people say about you? It just seems that you are so far ahead of everyone in the division. Do you take that as a compliment? Do you believe that, or how do you feel about it?
For me, it means, first of all, I appreciate it a lot because, I started martial arts very young age, 5 years old, and now I train in for, I do all these things, I fight, I train in for 26 years already. So all my life I spent doing this kind of stuff. And of course, after all this year, full dedication, training, and everything that I spent, of course, it's feeling great that this like recognition that like people they are speaking. But in the other, like from other side, it put on me more responsibility to keep the same work. And I'm just like this kind of person. I was like growing up with this mindset because of my family, because of my coach, Pavel Fedotov. He's every time was saying, it's no time to stop, never. Before you are like breathing, before you're living, it's every time you have to move forward. And if it's at this point, people like thinking about me like this, it's meaning for me, I have to keep forward. And it's no time to think, okay, it's enough, I did everything, now I have to enjoy. No, it's never. It's for me, it's like I have to work double right now.
Well, you're such an amazing representation of the sport, such a great role model. You're such a martial artist. I was wondering, you know, I've seen the crazy celebrations that happen in Kyrgyzstan when you win, but what has the impact been like in the country, like from your success? Because I'm from Ireland, and it went from nobody knowing what martial arts, mixed martial arts was, to everybody knowing when Conor McGregor came along. Is it like that in your country?
I would say so. For example, in my country, it was every time the sport number one, it was martial arts. It was like all kinds of wrestling, boxing, and all like I'm proud that in my country, sport number one is martial arts. And even like when there is a competition of soccer and another competition of martial arts and like professional fights, the arena is gonna be fullest of fans and people in martial arts competitions and soccer.
Amazing.
That's why in Kyrgyzstan, in Central Asia, people love UFC, they watching it all the time, they speak about the UFC, so it's like it's huge over there. So that's why everyone is very like giving paying a lot of attention to see every news and know everyone every fighters from UFC.
Wow, that's incredible. It's incredible. And do you find more women getting involved in the sport because of your success? We see it over here as well. When we have dominant European fighters, females, we see more females going to the gym. Do you think you inspired many women to get involved in martial arts, or was there already many women involved in martial arts where you're from?
You know, I really hope so. I really hope that there is like each day more girls starting to practicing, to train. And even if some of them don't think or like not considering their life being a professional athlete, I would love to see more girls just practicing martial arts. Because from one side, it's give like, if we are speaking about the physical condition, it's put you in a good shape. It's doing sports put you in the good mood as well. What is more, the important thing for like feels alive, happy life, and enjoying the life. And from like other side, it gives self-confidence. It's make you secure in yourself, so you are not that like person who is afraid of everything, what they're gonna think about me, what they're gonna like do or something like that stuff. You are just over than this, you are higher. You are just know that everything that you are doing, it's for yourself to enjoy it, to enjoy your life. And I hope not only girls, but every day would be more everyone, all people would do martial arts practicing and love the sports the same way as I love.
Amazing. One of the things that fascinates me about you is that, you're the UFC champion, you're dominant, you're completely out on your own in your division, but you're also your own manager. How did that happen? That's really an amazing thing for me to see, because even when I see fighters maybe four fights into their professional career, the first thing they do is get a manager. But here you are at the very top of the sport and you're managing yourself. How did this happen?
Yes, it was backwards. I had a manager first, and then I went as a self-manager.
Right.
Now it's about a little over than 1 year as a self-manager, and it works good for me because I feel that I felt that I can do it, and I can do it like all both things together. It's not affecting me at all. It doesn't take what people, they're afraid, oh, I will start to do these things and it will take out like time from my trainings or whatever. No, I can do this both. I can spend time on training, quality training. I can spend time on doing things like in my professional business stuff. And of course, it's you have to think about it. You have to like put more effort in this. You have to understand what you are doing. But isn't it the things that make you smarter? I think so. Every time in my life, I was I wanted to be how I express this. Be able to resolve everything that right. I can, to understand how things working, for not being like when this little dogs, little cubs, little cats, they are just born in, they are still like cannot see anything and they don't know nothing. So I don't want be that stuff. No, I want to understand everything. I want to be smart, clever, and good athlete at the same time.
You know, a lot of people are considering your next opponent, and I saw you at the post-fight press conference speak about JoJo. You spoke about Jennifer Moya and Roxanne, I believe. I know you just recently did an interview with Ariel Helwani, my good friend, and you said that JoJo is probably going to be next. Is that a fight that excites you?
Every fight excites me. Every fight. Yes. And I say that JoJo, she's every time giving her best in the fight. So she's fighting till the end, and she's trying like to, doesn't matter. I didn't watch a lot of her fights yet. I watched only fight against Caitlin, but at that moment I was focusing more on Caitlin than her. But she did great. She was like fighting till the end and trying to flip the fight like toward her side, and I consider it's same very good opponent. So I hope soon I will have a date and opponent name, so I probably could do. My sister's gonna fight in April 25th against Cynthia Calvillo, and
That's a great fight.
Yes, it's a good, very, very good fight. I think it's going to be a good one. And I will help her in her training camp. I will do the same things like training with her, doing all the stuff. So if it would be somewhere the date close to her fight, probably as we have already tradition 1 week after her fight.
Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I would say so. It would be amazing. Yeah.
Does it feel like, I feel like a lot of people ask you about Wiley Zhang and things like this. Do you feel like it's nearly disrespectful for the other fighters in your division that people are constantly trying to put you against a champion at strawweight or a champion at bantamweight? Because it seems to come up an awful lot, right?
I think it's a normal thing that people want to see that kind of fight, because it's became very popular about the super fight. And I think it's nature, people's nature to create this kind of interest of whatever.
Yes. So it's you don't feel as though it's slighting your division. It's just something that people will always think about.
Of course, it's nothing disrespectful to the fighters in flyweight division. They just it would be anyway. It would be the same things. Doesn't matter who would be in my weight class. They would create the same questions, the same interest. I think it's normal thing.
How did it feel to have Halle Berry there? I know you did this film Bruised with Halle, but I mean, she's one of the biggest stars in the whole world. And she looked like she is so excited to see you. She looked so happy after you got victory. You must be really good friends.
Oh, yes. I'm so happy that she came. It was like one of the biggest motivation for me. And she came before the fight. She went to the, our like changing room when I was warming up. She said like all best wishes. She like was amazing. And yes, definitely it was one of the reason why I felt I have to finish the fight soon.
Is she a good fighter? You've taught her how to fight, right? For on the film, how good is she at fighting now?
Oh, you know, she's very good. For this filming, she was preparing and she was training more than 3 years. Wow. Doing Muay Thai, MMA, boxing, every kind of martial arts. And she's actually, I can say from the professional point of view, she is in excellent shape. She's in good form. And yes, she is fighter now. Yes, she's actress and a fighter.
I have two more questions for you, Valentina. And thank you so much. This is a great honor for us. First question is, did Henry Cejudo vacate the belt because he was afraid of you?
You know, I didn't think about this, but now it makes sense.
It does.
Now I see the reason why.
I think you might have choked him too hard that time.
That time. Yeah, probably.
And one more. We are a European show. And of course, there was a very famous Shevchenko from Ukraine, a football player, Andrei Shevchenko. And because of this, we always just thought of you as a European. And you've mentioned earlier that Kyrgyzstan is actually in Asia. But we were wondering, could we bring you on as an honorary team member of Team Europe? Because we would love a champion on our team like you.
It would be a huge honor for me.
Oh my God,
course.
Amazing. I can't believe this is happening.
I cannot believe this is happening.
This is amazing. Valentina, that is the best news I've had all week. And thank you again for getting on to speak to us. And congratulations on another amazing performance. I cannot wait to see your next fight, whoever it's against, whatever weight division. You're one of the greatest fighters in the world, and it was an absolute pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you so much, Peter. Have a great time and enjoy the, everything. Enjoy the life.
You too, Valentina. See you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And what a pleasure it was to speak to Valentina Shevchenko.
Champ.
Of course, and where should we go now but to look at UFC 247? And what better place to start than Shevchenko's fight? Shevchenko's latest masterclass against Caitlin Chookagian. She bet the brakes off that girl.
Yeah, I think it was pretty much as we predicted last week. You know what can you do to fight her? Like, it's just she's a beast, man. Those you know, the switch kicks, the question mark kicks. There was all sorts going on.
Do you know what I find most impressive about her composure in the pocket? Like,
she
little slight head movements, tiny little movements that completely open up her opponent. The opponents are like, they're not even the same realm as far as I'm concerned. Like, I mean, totally. I think the world of Jojo Calderwood, but still, after seeing what Shevchenko's been doing to the flyweight division, it's very, like, I mean, it's impossible to pick against her, right?
Yeah, no, impossible to pick against her. And I think, you know, we often mention, you know, how calm champions look when they come out to the octagon. Dude, you wouldn't even know she's... You think she's going for breakfast or something? Yeah. Like, it's crazy how, as you said, when she's in the pocket there, how cool, calm, calculated. And listen, once she had Caitlin down the ground there, we saw, I think it was the end of the second round.
Oh, sorry.
When she dropped that elbow. Oh, yeah. That was just vicious. That sort of opened her up. And that really, I think, you could see in the second round then when Caitlin went to her corner that she was breathing heavy and going, Jesus, man, do I really want to be in here? And then ultimately she got in the crucifix. And listen, fine stoppage. I've no problem with it. It would have just got worse. And a good stoppage from the referee. And I think obviously with the night that was in it as well, Peter, with all the controversy with the commission and stuff, a bit of kudos there goes to the referee for stopping it at that point, because it would have just got a lot worse and a lot nastier for Caitlin Chookagian.
I look back at UFC 196, we were both there for McGregor and Diaz, and when she fought Amanda Nunes the first time, and I mean, the ground was where, you know, Nunes dominated the fight, but you look at Shevchenko now, obviously coming from a Thai background, a person who's had multiple world titles as a Thai fighter, she looks like she's been grappling her whole life.
Like, you know, it's just so just comfortable.
So little, tiny little details everywhere. It's just she's a serious, serious talent, and she's going nowhere.
But like, it just shows that the mindset and the champion that she is, that she's gone back and worked on that, because she wasn't obviously as comfortable with that a number of fights ago.
But she looks as capable there as she does on the feet now. It's incredible. Yeah. Like, it's actually incredible.
Amazing athlete. And listen, I think Joe asked her after what she's going to do next, and I think they put anyone up against her, and listen, 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, you're picking Valentina to win it.
Absolutely. Let's just take a quick look through the Europeans that were in action on the night, and we'll come back and have a look at Jones. Mirsad Bektic loses a split decision to Dan Ige. Mirsad again didn't come
Talked
out hot.
About him.
Yeah, this is pretty much exactly how you called it, to be fair.
Yeah, no, it's just disappointing because, you know, he was eating way too much damage. He got him in a choke at one point in the second round, I think it was.
Beautiful groundwork in the second round. Like, I mean, he came back into it, and I was like, Jesus, this is his now. But I thought the commentary team did a great job of reminding us that Ige does drop off in the second round, and he was on fire again in round three.
Yeah, and it's just annoying with Mirsad, because you just love to see him just go, get guys up against the cage, grapple them, just, you know, use your rest and use what you're
so
strong
dominant
at.
On top. Like,
and when he was standing with Dan Ige, he was just taking shots. He was getting picked off, you know, in that first
round.
Ige
looked incredible, though. I mean, his hands are insane. Yeah. Like, I mean, Jesus. Like, beating him, Mirsad, to the punch with his jab and stuff. Like, I mean, that's pretty impressive stuff. Yeah. Like,
no, he was really good. Listen, props to Dan Ige. Excellent performance. I'm just disappointed with Mirsad. I think he's a lot of injuries as well, building up over the last few years. We've talked about his inactivity. I don't know.
It's hard for him to get a momentum going, isn't it?
It is.
Ilir Latifi didn't have a successful return to heavyweight against Derek Lewis. I believe it was his heavyweight debut in the UFC, was it? Yeah.
245 pounds. Just shows how that guy cuts.
Look, hard fight. Derek Lewis is fighting at home, but as I said to you, I expected a decision here, and Ilir pushed him pretty closely. I mean, I thought Lewis won the fight. Don't get me wrong. I saw some people complain about why didn't Ilir win. Like, I mean, I thought it was fairly in Lewis's favor there, but definitely stuff to build on, right? Like, when he gets the fight down, he's very dominant in the top position again. But that single leg pick he was trying to use against Lewis, he was just too tall. You couldn't get a pivot off him.
He's just a tree trunk as Lewis. Like, he's a big incredible dude, man. And it's just...
What about Ilir's? Like, ate some of his big, big shots as well, man.
No, Ilir's a tough dude, man. Yeah. He's a very tough dude, but it's just...
A neck like a fire hydrant, as they were saying.
Yeah, but you just go... You go, like, realistically, how far is he going to go in the heavyweight division? That's just the realistic fact for Ilir, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That was all the Europeans that were in action on the night. But we have to talk about some of the controversies surrounding the commission on the night. A lot of people felt they were ill-prepared. They did not get the right judges in, as Dominic Cruz spoke a lot about. These are boxing judges for the most part. Joe Solis was in for the most amount of backlash on the night. I believe it was the first time he had judged a fight since 2017. In particular, his 30-27 scorecard for Andre Uhl and his
49-46
for Jones were things that really kind of flashed up in a lot of people. Even like the commissioner, the computer crashed at the end of the at the end of the Uhl Martinez fight. There was some controversy surrounding also Andrea Lee's fight as well with Lauren Murphy. So it wasn't just the one robbery we're talking about, even though that seems to be the main event that a lot of people are talking about. There was a lot, you know, layers upon layers of just issues. I'm not going to say robberies, but I'm going to say just issues.
Yeah, I don't think there were robberies. I think it was really on the judges' scorecards, and the discrepancy on the scorecards across the board was the main sort of puzzling thing. Like, how the fuck are you getting a 49-46 in that fight? Listen, I think the third round, we can talk about it, was the round where you can see it scored Sway either round, way. Yeah. Listen, I had Reyes winning the first three, Jones comfortably the second.
Same.
The fourth and the fifth. So you're scoring Jones the first, Reyes the first three, definitely the first two, and he's scoring it. That, like, how is he getting that? I really don't understand how he's getting that scorecard.
Do you call it a robbery?
No.
No, you don't do it.
No, because then I think the third round you can go and go, oh, shit, look at it again. Oh, fuck, I can make a case for Jones taking that round. Like, definitely. Like, it's not clear cut in any way. But the first two rounds and the last two rounds are definitely clear cut. Like, there's no way I think they could have gone either way, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, would you be reluctant if you were a coach and you had a fighter who was scaling the ranks and suddenly they're handed a title shot in Houston, Texas? What do you say?
No, well, listen, the UFC, if this is another issue that hasn't probably been brought up, why are the UFC keep bringing big fights back to Dallas under that commission when they've had issues in the past. There's been this similar problem in the past with UFC events that have been in the state of Texas. And it just sort of baffles me that the UFC keep going back to this market until they're happy with the commission. You know, obviously the rulings as well, the old rules, you know, the 10-8 rounds, it has to be, you know, a much wider mark or a much more clear 10-8 rounds than the new rules that have been brought in. So it's across the board, it's just a fucking mess. And I don't know, understand why they're giving themselves these headaches, because it's not going to reflect good in the UFC either when there's things like this keep happening, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, it's hampering people's careers.
Of course.
You know, it's very tough. Yeah, I feel like it just, in this day and age, it's just not good enough to have people not understanding the judging criteria.
You talked about it earlier on in terms of boxing and MMA judges, I think was...
How would we have dedicated MMA judges here. How are you going to tell me the biggest state in the US, Texas, they can't find some judges? It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, I feel like the media have been able to educate themselves in Europe based on the judges. Like, we have a great outlet there with Ben Cartledge. Anytime we don't understand something, we get on the phone and we understand it, but it feels like people just aren't doing that anymore. Like, in Houston, like, I mean, it just feels like people are so ill-informed or misinformed, and, you know, a lot of people going home there, they probably feel like they should have had, you know, they should have had a better crack of it from the judges on the night, and I don't think that's a good way to have it at the pinnacle of the sport.
I think if the scorecards are different, we're not probably talking about this. If they're closer and you can see, you know, obviously if there's one round in it, and in both fights or in all
in multiple
cases,
fights,
there was like the James Krause fight as well, one of the first rounds. Yeah. Like, fair enough if you know, if it happens once in a blue moon, but you know, on one scorecard, like, grand, but it's happened four times in one night at scorecards that are totally perplexing everyone across the board. And it's mental. And I think the UFC are really going to have to take a stance with this commission now. And I know they've come out with a statement this evening.
Do you want to read it up there?
They've basically come out, I'll give you the sort of the bottom line. They've basically come out and said, we know everyone across the board, media, fans, have had their say. It's obviously very... subjective opinion on how fights are scored. They look to constantly improve, and
no, they don't.
That's what bullshit. That's what they're trying to do. Yeah, but like, you know.
But all I'm saying is, right, if this happened in Dublin, I'd be fucking embarrassed.
Yeah,
as an Irishman, I'd be like, this is a joke.
Yeah, it is. It's
and it wouldn't happen in Ireland because we have people who understand the rules here, understand the skill set. I mean, understand the criteria.
Yeah, no, it is. And you look at, you know, we talk to guys like Ben Cartledge, as you said there. We've had him on, you know, our shows over the years we've done together. And it's been, it's just sort of fascinating to get his insight on it.
Well, you can't
compared to what we have. It's invaluable.
You never understand things fully, like, until you're talking to a guy who's been there, you know, who actually has lived these situations. Like, even if you notice Rogan the other night was going mental about Andrea Lee and saying the judge wasn't looking at the fights, they've clarified that the monitors were there. But Ben was saying that immediately, like,
yeah,
pretty
100%.
Much straight away. Yeah. I was like, oh, well, that's what that is, and moved on. Like, you know, it's... But to Rogan's credit, when there is a shitstorm going on and you can see all these decisions coming in, why would you have any faith in them that he is watching the fight? You know, you start to wonder, I'm sure, in his situation, like, what the hell is going on here?
That is true, yeah. And, you know, there could easily be a TV at his feet. Was there? I don't know if that was confirmed or not.
I don't know.
I don't know either, but...
But, I mean, Ben has recently refereed UFC fights, and he knows that there's one there, so I'd say there probably was. Like.
Yeah, well, Rogan, you know, he does spout his mouth quite a lot in his stuff. And I thought, you know, like, right, yeah, no, I think, you know what I mean, you know, he says stuff maybe off the cuff that he shouldn't say at times, and I think that was the case, you know, even, you know, after the Andre Ewell fight, before the scores were even read out, and he was probably right in one of the scorecards again, but... You know, Dominic Cruz more or less said, I think this was exact quote, I have it here, I don't think they know what they're telling half the time anyways. You know, it's just a little bit, oh, come on, guys. Right? When you have two guys that agree so much on this point, I don't think, you know, I think we could be a little bit more on maybe looking at the stats and seeing why, you know, why did he score this round that way, or why did he look at it instead of just both agreeing and slamming on the judges, because you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah. Just for Ben Cartledge.
That's it. No, 100%. Yeah. That's what they should do. But basically, I'll just read the rest of the statement if we want to have a look. Claims have been made that a judge was not paying attention to the fight and was looking down at the floor, as we just referred to. One of the advances the UFC has made in the past several years has been to provide small video monitors below the floor level of the octagon for each judge to look more closely and monitor the matches. So that's just in relation to what we were saying there. So just iron it out.
Absolutely. Let's have a chat about Leah getting the main event. A lot of talk about this. There's a lot of, to be honest, like, it is a big talking point for the scene here. I mean, everybody was talking about this. I didn't feel it was complete criticism. I saw a lot of people getting behind Leah as well when it was brought up. Obviously, we did see a lot of people saying, you know, we think Paul Redmond should be the main event. His fight with Georgie Karakanyan is definitely the these guys have a far bigger legacy. They have done a lot more things in the sport than, say, Leah and Judith. But for me, we keep on looking at this from a meritocracy point of view. Like, we keep on looking at this as a, like, Paul has earned a spot, which he has, so he should be the headline fight. But they have never, ever built a card around, merit. As in, the top fight has never been like, oh, this one's going to have huge implications on the division. This one is the guys who have been tried and tested the hardest, and that's why they're in the main event. They're always trying to transcend the sport every time. And James Gallagher's a guy, every time you're going to put him on the top there, he nearly transcends the little MMA bubble here in Europe, and it goes across to the US. And I think their thinking behind putting Leah there is this historic main event. It looks like this is a story that can hit a lot more casual people, and, like, you know, a lot of female interest as well outside of this. And I think that's what they've gone for, instead of, you know, going against everything that they have been doing in the past and putting Redzor at the top of the card. I just don't think they're ever going to give that guy the crack he deserves.
Yeah.
You know,
no, yeah, I agree with you with that. With Paul, it just doesn't seem as though they even like Paul at times.
How could you not like Paul?
I can understand that. I'm only messing. Listen, but yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, Peter. At the end of the day, but right. We can go back to Bellator, what they've done in the past as well, in terms of main events and in terms of fighters. But, right, a lot of the problem we've said over the years, just in general with Bellator, even before they sort of even conquered and sort of came in with this European series, was the slow build of fighters, right?
Yeah.
I think they've run out of options in this card, and that's why, you know, they've gone to Leah, a girl who's obviously dealt with the media, more so obviously up in Northern Ireland. She's been on UTV, on BBC, a lot of the mainstream outlets there have covered her.
And that's a big thing as well. Like, she is bringing in media attention that otherwise would not be there.
Of course, and that's why I think they've done it. I don't agree with it. You know, I'd love to see Leah, as I tweeted out last week, I'd like to see Leah get some more fights behind her. And just be a slower build, like what Bellator have traditionally done in the past. And I think why they're doing this is because of that reason. The media puts more eyes and focus on the fight.
And casual interest.
But in terms of longevity for Leah, it's a lot of pressure in a short space of time upon her. And I just don't like it. I think, you know, if Bellator heads had a better, more of a backup plan on the European cards here, as we've talked about, that we'd have other options to be able to put on the top of the card.
Yeah, well, look, it's this is a huge opportunity for Leah. I feel like...
And obviously she's not going to turn it down, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely not, and as she shouldn't as well. But this is all on Bellator now. Like, as you've made relevant points there. Leah, a couple of weeks out from this event, is now thrust into the main event spot where she has far more media obligations, even far more than she's used to, even though she's always done a lot. She'll have far more media obligations, which is less time for cutting weight. And I mean, this is all stuff that they have put on her, and they need to make sure that, you know, everything is sorted out for Leah this week, because it is a big step up. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And there's also the experience factor in that main event. We're going to see the likes of Redmond in there beforehand, Bungard and Primus, and then we're going to go to Leah. So there's pressure on her to perform in a new way. She's always got pressure to perform, but to perform with the spotlight
How you handle it, man.
So I think Bellator, you know, this is gonna be on them at the end of the day. Like, if it doesn't work out, I'm not gonna blame Leah for it. I mean, she's just coming in here having any other fight. You know what I mean? As far as she was concerned, and now everything's been turned upside down. But
it's a very different approach to what they normally do, and it smells to me from their point of view, maybe a little bit. I don't mean to be disrespectful, like a little bit of we've no options left, and we sort of have to do this. Because
I think there was options. I mean,
Paul and Georgie, but as we said, we knew Paul,
Primus and Bungard, former world champion. You know what I mean? There is options there. I really feel like there's method here. As
but,
in,
I think in terms of the market, it was always going to be a person that's, you know, probably from this island and that's going to headline the card here. And that's obviously what they've done in the past. So, yeah, listen, I just, as I said before, we've said it for weeks that we'd like a little bit more steel behind these cards. And we, you know, in fairness to Bellator, we did have that with, you know, in terms of a fight that's going to mean something with, you know, Peter Queeley and Primus. Obviously that fell out and it was Bungard that stepped in, but I think we need sort of more of those fights going forward in the cards here.
Oh, yeah, I definitely wouldn't disagree with you there. But it is a huge moment for Leah McCourt. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And we got to have a chat with Leah about this moment. And it is a big deal for her. And I mean, as I said to her, you know, what would this have meant to you when you were starting out your career to see a woman at the top of one of these big cards that comes to Ireland? And you know, she said she couldn't have even believed it. She sort of, you told me 2 weeks ago that this was going to happen, I couldn't believe it, you know? And she's saying she always had Ash and Catherine Costigan there, and she hopes this will, again, pave the way for a whole new generation of Irish women, and I really hope it does. I have confidence in her because she has been in the spotlight for a long time, that she can do this, that she can pull it off. Bellator are asking an awful lot of her.
Massive, yeah, totally.
That's the reality of the situation, but an absolute pleasure to speak to Leah ahead of the biggest week of her career, without a doubt. And thanks to Dan Apostolos for sorting it out for us, as always. I love you, Dan.
Legend.
But let's get on to Leah here. She did gave us about 15 minutes here, and we'll be back afterwards to look ahead to this UFC Rio Rancho card. It is a pleasure to be joined by the new main event, the new headline act for Bellator Dublin, Miss Leah McCourt. She's known as the Curse. I like to call her Mainstream because of all the media attention she's coveted since day one. But oh my God, Leah, what a huge moment for you. How good did it feel to get that phone call, and how did it happen? How did you find out?
It's pretty surreal, and it's been an emotional week. Just you know my journey I've been on. But it was kind of funny. On Monday I heard at training that James potentially was injured. And I was going to Owen, I was like, are you going to get in? I was like, they better not come to this card. And Owen was like, no, we'll get someone in. And then for a joke, I was driving home from Dublin, and I texted Jude and was like, Jude, main event idea. And I sent him the goat emoji, and I was like, what about Artem? I was like, he'll not be signed to any promotion. He's the man, everybody loves him. And Jude texts back saying, no. And then he goes, Leah McCourt. And I went, haha, in a heartbeat. And he goes, exactly. And I said, Jude, this is going to be a main event performance. I just say the word and it's done. And he never replied. And I obviously just was laughing it off, like thinking that it was just a joke. And I was came back up the road, was sitting in the sauna just doing recovery before I taught my ladies class. And Jude messaged me, goes, well, you better perform then.
Wow.
The last message was, This is a main event performance. And then Mike Coogan messaged me from LA and was like, yo, you there? And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I just had a feeling they were going to ask me. And he was like, I said, Mike, don't be texting me unless you ask me to be in the main event. he was like, you are. And I was like, send him a voice note, like screaming in the sauna. And then the people that owned this sauna came running in. They thought something had happened to me. No, it's okay. And then, was just buzzing. I had to, run out of the sauna to go and teach my ladies' class. And it was just surreal, yeah.
So there was absolutely no hesitation. You were just like, yeah, let's do this. Like, I mean, was there ever a part of you, do you have to talk to Roddy? Do you talk to Molly, anyone like that? Or were you just like, I know I can do this immediately?
Well, at the end of the day, nothing has changed. I'm going in to fight the same girl on the same night, on the same card, in the same place. It's just, you know, obviously a bit of a bigger platform, and you know, my focus is always going to be on my performance, and you know, with all this media said and done and all the rest of it, I know what work I put in, my team know what work I do every day, every single second of every day, to you know, bring out the best version of myself. So that's always my goal and my focus. So I just said of course, like straight away, and then I messaged Owen and Molly, and I think Molly had a heart attack, and Owen was just like as cool as ever. Like, oh, brilliant, your time's coming.
Amazing. It's like for me, when I'm thinking about this and the historical nature of it, the fact that you were the first female to main event a card of this magnitude in Ireland, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, as you're coming up, of course, you would grapple for many years. But I mean, I'm sure it was a big thing for you to look at, like, the likes of Aisling Daly, even Catherine Costigan, while you were making your initial steps in the sport. And I'm just thinking about, like, what would it have meant to a young Liam McCourt who's just getting into MMA to see a woman being main event of a card of this magnitude. That surely would have been a huge motivational and tool or very inspirational for you as a younger fighter.
I definitely would never have believed it if you had told me that. Even this time last year, I would never have believed it, or this time last week. It is very surreal, and it's just testament to how Bellator do their own things, and they walk their own path, and they set themselves apart, giving me this opportunity, giving a female so young in their career this opportunity to shine. And yeah, definitely, like, Catherine and Aisling are just pioneers of Irish MMA, and you know, they paved the way in front of me, and I'm just coming up and hopefully going to encourage more females to believe themselves and just keep pursuing whatever they want.
Yes. What was Isabella's reaction, if I can ask, your daughter?
Isabella was like, "Mum, what's that? What's main event?" And I was like, "Isabella, I'm going to be like on the show, the last one on." She goes, "Oh, right, okay." And just went back to talking about her dog or something. Like, she's very unfazed by everything.
Have you had any contact with James? Did James reach out to wish you best of luck? Obviously, you know, he has had to pull out. It's very unfortunate. You know, James is a huge name, obviously, in Irish MMA. Have you heard anything from James?
Yeah, I have. You know, James is a good friend of mine, and he's always been so supportive, and I would get some training in with him, and, you know, he said he'd go and grab this opportunity and make noise. And so, obviously, I was as gutted as anybody to hear this fight called off. Like, James is a superstar, and he's a gentleman, and always has been, so it is disappointing he's not going to be here, or he's not going to be performing on the night, but everything happens for a reason, and it's just nice to kind of step in and hold the fort for him until he's back.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But, I mean, it's obvious, right, that for me that you have huge star potential. Bellator have seen that since day one. As I said at the top of the show, you have kind of done more mainstream media than any other fighter on this card. So I'm sure it played into it a lot, the fact that they know that Leah can handle this media pressure. She has been in the spotlight for a very, very long time. And that's a big part of this, right? Like, is it daunting at all for you thinking about the extended media schedule and you know, the spotlight of the main event as such? Does that kind of come in? Is that daunting at all?
No, not really, to be honest. You know, like, that isn't, no, as I said, I just focus on my performance and winning and showing my skill set. And, like, you know, I just feel like I haven't shown any of my potential yet. And that's all I ever care about. Like, I come out after fights in bad form and bad mood because I know I've made mistakes or done things wrong. It puts, like, drives me insane, puts my head away. So, like, doing the media and stuff like that, like, I don't mind doing that. Like, do you know what I mean? It's part of the job. And I think that there's so much more to being a professional fighter than getting in the cage and fighting. You have to put a lot of work in outside. You have to, do you know what I mean? Like, be somebody that somebody wants to watch and engaging with whoever, like, the fight fans or the media, and get them interested and get them talking about the card. That's, do a massive part. If it wasn't the fans or the media, these shows wouldn't happen and we wouldn't be getting paid and we wouldn't be given these platforms. You have to show the loss yourself in all areas.
Yeah, I mean, does it bother you at all? Like, and I mean, I haven't seen, like, a huge amount of this online. There was some, like, the fact that people are going, oh, this guy should be in the main event, like, or this person, or this person. I mean, it's always going to happen, right? Like, this stuff is, it's always, like, a big news moment like that. It's gonna get some differing opinions. But, I mean, do you let it bother you, or just look past it straight away? Like, I mean, even the people that they're mentioning, like, even Paul Redman and stuff, I know you guys are good friends. I can imagine that they're all kind of, you know, giving you a pat on the back for getting this moment and having this main event.
Yeah, of course, all the guys are so supportive. You know, like, most of us, we've all fought in the amateur shows together. We've all fought in the halls and IMAX coming up, and now we're fighting, you know, on a show like this in Ireland and celebrating us all. And so it's not about one person. You know, there could be anybody at the top of the card. At the end of the day, there's going to be 14 unbelievable fights in that night, and it's not just, you know, one person. We all put the show together, and it's just, do I think it's positive? Anybody that says something negative, like, I just, like, I surround myself with successful people. I listen, they're the only people I listen to. I listen to their opinions. I listen to, you know, like Owen, Roddy and Molly. They've got such a good, successful team around me. You know, somebody in social media that I don't know has not achieved, you know, like what we have done. It's definitely nothing I ever look into or listen to. You know, and no matter who was headlining the card, there would have been backlash. It should have been them. But I just think it's the moment to be celebrated and the moment that everybody should kind of get behind, because it is. Going to be history.
Absolutely. You know, and like the thing is, right, look at the reaction this has caused, right? Like, I mean, who else could have been put into this main event and had so many people talking? Who at Cyborg was talking to Jerry McCarthy of KO Media? Did you see that? That's incredible. He's like, this is amazing. That, like, I mean, that is crazy, right? Jerry's to have Cyborg bigging you up.
Jerry's a man, I know. Like, look at Cyborg last weekend.
Yes.
Best she's ever lived their life. Like, unbelievable. Do you know what I mean? Even our names are in the same sentence. It's a bit unbelievable to me, but yeah, it's exciting.
Is that, like, I mean, is there any kind of thing, like, when you become a main event fighter in this situation and you're in that division, like, I mean, do you feel as though a win, you know, they will be talking about Leah versus Cyborg and stuff like that, or do you feel as though you still want to have a few more fights before you get into that conversation?
Obviously, Cyborg is very down, you know, had a long career so far, and if you look at my record, I'm right at the beginning of my career.
Yes.
You know, when that day comes, or if that's in my future, like, I will be ready for that, and that is, like, ultimate goal, ultimate, like, in female MMA, she is the greatest woman of all time. If you look at her performances and her fights, she's, and like, Shauna Fee looked better than she's ever looked last week.
Yeah, incredible. She was incredible.
Just unbelievable. Yeah. Just even, like, being in the same conversation is a privilege, like, for me, obviously.
Yes. She's a legend. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. But I have one more question, Leah, because there is nobody I know of yet coming out the zombie now without Peter Queeley. And I saw you teasing this on Twitter. You didn't specifically say, I'm... Well, you did, actually. You said, I'm taking that song now. But,
no, I said...
Go ahead, sorry.
I think Sean has said something, like, devastating news, and I was just, like, enlightening the subject. I was, like, dibs on zombie, but no, I'm not walking like a zombie.
Oh, are you going to keep us guessing? Can you reveal, or are you going to keep it as a surprise for the night?
It's going to be one to watch. It will be unbelievable, don't worry.
It sounds amazing. Well, look, you, I can't wait to see this fight. It's a huge moment for you, and I really believe a win here, if you're talking the way you're talking, as in this will be a main event performance, I believe that pushes your star into a completely different stratosphere. So congratulations. I will speak to you on Fight Week, and Leah, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you so much.
There is plenty of European action this weekend in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Our very own Europe's own Jan Blachowicz taking on Corey Anderson, with the winner probably unlikely to take on John Jones next after Dominic Reyes's fight recently, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
It's doesn't feel like, I mean, this fight felt like it was going to definitely get the next number one contender.
Well, I think we both sort of felt Corey probably should have got us.
Yeah.
But I think Corey's going to be waiting a while.
Yeah, Corey's not going to be showing up to any John Jones public meet and greets anyway, anytime soon. I wouldn't say.
Or Jan.
No, but it's tough because it's really kind of taken the meaning away from this fight. Do you know what I mean? Because everyone just wants to see Reyes and Jones do again because it's such a close fight, right? Like, I mean, it's really...
Yeah.
It's kind of taking the juice out of this one for me.
Yeah, I still want to see.
Oh, we still want to see it, but I don't... Like, the implications have...
Yeah. I've changed, but yeah. I still want to see Jones forget light heavyweight and go up to heavyweight.
What do you think about the car crash waiting to happen that is Diego Sanchez and Michael Pereira in the co-main event?
Like, I don't have much to say, really, to be honest.
You're a big Diego Sanchez fan, aren't you?
Listen, man, I love the guy. He's been great for the sport, and I know he had a recent resurgence that we've sort of talked about, and then obviously lost to Michael Chiesa. But, you know, come on.
What?
Like, what? Do you want to see him in there either? No. No, you don't.
I do.
You don't.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm not interested really at all in that fight.
You're going to turn it off for that one?
No, I won't turn it off, but it just makes me sort of uncomfortable, man. It does. I have to...
Like a stone in one shoe?
Yeah. or like some food in your mouth and need a toothpick like you did earlier on.
I still need that. That is wrecking me head. Elsewhere, we have Mara Romero Barella trying to get back to winning ways. 2-2 in the UFC so far. She's against Montana De La Rosa in a flyweight bout there. And of course, we have Nathaniel Wood against John Dodson on the prelims. What is wrong with you people? Why do you guys even think about this shit? That should be main card all day long. That's a ridiculously high level fight.
It is. It's class. It's unbelievable. And you know, what are we saying? What's Nathaniel at the moment? 9th, 10th, 11th, somewhere along those lines in terms of rankings in the UFC?
I don't know. He hasn't fought for a year, like, so I don't know if he's... Has he gone into the rankings?
I think he's in the rankings.
Are you just spouting nonsense?
No, I'm not. No, not at all. I think he is in the rankings. John Dodson's obviously a guy who's fought for fucking flyweight titles. Now this is a bantamweight, but what a test. You know, a win here for Nathaniel Wood is, you're right up looking at the top few.
Nathaniel Wood not in the rankings. John Dodson is number 13, though. So, I mean, he's going to be knocking on the door after this, you'd imagine. Marlon Vera sitting at 14 there. A man who Nathaniel has been requesting for quite a long time.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But do you, like, I mean, we're going to hear from Nathaniel in a few minutes. We had a great chat with him there. He's been in Rio Rancho for a week or so already. Do you feel as though this can be the one that catapults him into those big fights? This is already a big fight, let's be honest, but will this be the kind of fight that will allow him to get a fight against Vera? Like, to get these fights against... I can even remember he suggested Cody Garbrandt once, maybe. Like, those fights would be absolutely ridiculous. Like, I could watch the shit out of that.
Yeah, 100%. Like, John Dodson, as I said, there is a guy who's...
Done it all, yeah.
He's done it all. You know, maybe he's not on the best form, and he's dropped, like, 4 of his last 6 fights. Obviously, Peter Yan went, you know, the distance with Peter Yan and Jimmy Rivera. Like, they're two fucking bloody animals. Yeah. Jimmy Rivera and, obviously, Peter Yan. He's going to be a world champion in probably in the next 2 years at some point. But, like, that's what I mean. Like, when you're beating, you're getting to go over a guy like this, that's going to fucking blast you right up there into contention in this division. He'll jump up to top 5 if he wins this fight. Well, maybe not top 5.
He's after a finish.
Top 10.
Because Dodson's never been finished. He's like, if I finish him, they have to give me a top 10. I agree.
Oh, yeah, 100%. If he finishes him, yeah, without doubt. But the problem with getting Dodson, man, he's just like a little fucking flea in there. He's just so
unbelievable,
quick.
Man. Yeah, he's very acrobatic.
So fast, and he's so hard to get after, so hard to catch. As you said, he's never been finished. Obvious reasons why, because you can't get after the fucker. He's like that annoying kid in school, and I think we've seen that in the gym with him and John Jones always fecking out, and Andrei Arlovsky as well. So yeah, listen, a win over him and a finish over him would be an absolute bloody statement from Nathaniel Wood. And listen, from what we've seen from Nathaniel and what we know the ability he has, I would not be surprised, because he's that good and he's that young, and I'm a year out as well, man. How much has he improved in that fucking year, this guy?
Yeah, I can't wait to see it, man. Looking at the card here, anything else that jumps out to you for me straight away? Yancy Medeiros and Lando Banada.
Easily. Ooh. That's a war. Someone's getting finished there. It's going to be one of those fights where we're looking at a fight of the night. Two lads bloody and beaten after 3 rounds of absolutely knocking 10 shades of shit out of each other. It's one of those fights. And also, I like, Jim Miller, a guy who's, you know, getting on a little bit as well. And you know, I love Jim, always enjoyed his fights. That's a really, really good scrap against Scott Hulsman, who's never in really a bad fight, always in exciting fights. And that's one of those fights, like Medeiros and Lando Venata, that could be two guys standing there absolutely out in their feet at the end of the fight. So they're definitely the other fights I think we should watch out for. And, you know, Macy Chasson as well against Nico Montana, two ladies who did very, very well in that Ultimate Fighter.
You mean former series flyweight champion?
Former flyweight champion, Nico Montana.
Well, you ruined me a little bit there. I was going to ask you, are you looking forward to the former world champion that's fighting on the card, hoping that you wouldn't realise? But you ruined that for me. Yeah, so let's get on to Nathaniel Wood. Well, that's what I am. I'm a rude person.
Prick.
Nathaniel Wood, a pleasure to speak to Nathaniel. I can't wait to see him back in there, man. I can't believe it's been fucking 11 months since we saw him last. That's crazy.
Is that London?
Yeah,
it must be. The UFC London card. Jesus Christ. Like, fucking, I mean, hell.
But look, he has the juice now. I was even asked him about this. Like, Katie Hunter did an interview with Sean O'Malley the other day. He's talking away about, you know, Nathaniel. Nathaniel thinks he doesn't want any of that, to be honest. Look, there's a lot ahead of this guy. I'm actually pissed off he's not on the London card, to be honest. I've said it enough. I'm trying not to say it again, but I do say it in this interview. I apologize. Here's Nathaniel Wood. We'll see you in about 15. And once again, we are joined by the former Cage Warriors bantamweight champion, currently 3-0 in the UFC and making his return, would you believe? I cannot believe this stat. After nearly 11 months on the sideline, it is Nathaniel Wood, the prospect himself. Nathaniel, how are you, sir? It's been a long time.
I'm very good, mate. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a long time, but I'm buzzing to get back in there. Obviously, this week sucks a little bit, as always, with the weight cut and stuff. But, mate, I'm buzzing. You know, I'm getting to go against John Dodson, who's, you know, I don't even need to introduce him.
Yes.
And, you know, this I feel like is my fight to put my name on the map.
Has it been a difficult year? Like, a guy like you, I know how intensely you train, how much you have put your whole life towards this career. I mean, for you to be out for a whole, like, nearly a whole year, has that been a trying time for you?
It has been tough. Obviously, after my last fight, I went traveling with my missus. I went away with her for 6 weeks, which was nice. You know, I feel like I needed a little bit of time off, a little break. Even though every day I was pretty much thinking about training, you know, it was nice to just switch off. I came back, felt amazing. You know, I got in shape. I was looking for a fight and then got injured. You know, obviously broke my arm and stuff, which put me out. And that was a real pain in the ass, you know, being kind of forced to not train. You know, literally a week after, I was in the gym with my cast and I was just working head movement and my leg kicks and jabs and basically anything that I could do. Because I'm just, you know, in a way, I'm addicted to training. But that forcing me out of training, in a way, has kind of, you know, it's made me realize how much I actually love the sport. And it's given me that another little kickstart, if you know what I mean, to appreciate what I've actually got. So, you know, training for this fight has been enjoyable. It's been a grind as well, but I've enjoyed every minute. And, you know, come Saturday night, I'm going to get to show that.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you've gone out early, right? Like, you've been in Rio Rancho for a while now, or at least in the US for a while now. Is that just to get yourself acclimatized?
Yeah, mate, obviously this fight's at high altitude. He lives here, so, you know, I don't want him having that advantage. So, you know, I invested in a altitude machine back at home, so I just wanted to start getting used to it. I've come out here now a little bit earlier to acclimatize, and, you know, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. I feel like I've got used to it. The first couple of days, a little bit, I think, you know, you kind of feel like you've got a bit of a dry throat. The altitude, the first couple of days, I felt like it was a little bit dry. But, you know, now I'm feeling switched on and ready to go.
And, I mean, have the New Mexican people been good to you, or do you feel like people are spitting in your burgers over there? Tell us how that feels.
Mate, obviously no burgers for me, unfortunately, but... no, the people over here have been amazing, mate. I feel like they're on my side. You know, I haven't met loads of people out here, but all the Uber drivers that I've been having, everyone at the hotel, you know, I'd like to think they're on my side. They're really nice people out here. So, you know, if they want to boo me in the crowd, so be it. If they want to cheer me, great. But, you know, regardless, I'm going to be bringing my A game.
You see, you have been that guy. You've been the hometown hero so many times. I can't even count how many times we've seen you in London getting that raucous support. And, you know, you've been on the other side of the coin, certainly. But, I mean, is there anything that can prepare you for that, do you feel? Like, you know, going out in front of a crowd in Albuquerque where this guy... I mean, sorry, in New Mexico where this guy is well-known and a well-known commodity from the region.
If I'm honest, it doesn't bother me. If they boo, it will be an atmosphere. So regardless of whether they're cheers, they're or boos, it's an atmosphere in there. I get the tunnel vision, you know, so come fight night, it's only going to be me and John Dodson that are going to go at it. So it doesn't matter what the crowd do for me, you know, I'm still going to turn up as the same fighter as I always do. It's just nice, obviously, to get some cheers. And if I don't get cheers going into the fight, you know, I believe that I'll have them cheering me at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, like a guy like Dodson, as you said at the start of the show, everybody knows this guy. He's been thereabouts. He's fought for titles. And look, we've seen guys take huge leaps in their career after going in there and being successful against him. What do you feel like this does for you, Nathaniel? Like, I mean, you know the game better than anyone.
Well, this is huge for me. Obviously, I only want to fight guys that have something for me to gain from. Obviously, I could sit there and fight just nobody's, and it's not really going to push my career anywhere. So, you know, I want to be in there with the best in the world, prove my worth. You know, I believe that I'm one of the best in the world. So, you know, obviously going against Dodson, that's great. He's ranked higher than me. He's got a better CV than me. So, you know, if I can beat him, then where does that put me? If I can finish him, you know, I believe that I can fight anyone there is in that top 10 because he's never been finished. He's been in there with the best. You know, he's lost to the best, but no one's actually put him out. So if I can go in there, knock him out, or whether it be a submission or TKO, then, you know, I think that I'm not far off a title shot.
You know, by the way you said that, I feel like you are quite confident that you can get a stoppage at the weekend.
Yeah, I train hard. You know, I train with, I believe, the best people I could possibly be training with in the UK. And I know that MMA, a lot of it comes down to who turns up on the night. You know, it can kind of be a flip of a coin. So, you know, I go in there, I enjoy it. I don't really have a game plan as much, but, you know, out of my 16 wins, I got 14 finishes. So I'm always going in there confident that I'm going to get the finish.
I was wondering if you saw a recent interview on MMA UK with Katie Hunter. It was Sean O'Malley, and he was, you know, very respectfully he was speaking about you, and he was kind of saying you are on his radar, and he thinks it's inevitable that you two guys fight in the future. I'm just asking because, obviously, you said, you know, you want to fight guys with big names. O'Malley's a guy who came into the UFC similarly to you with a huge name from the US, you, of course, from Europe and the UK. Does that make sense to you in the future? Is that an appealing fight for you?
For me, it's an appealing fight in the sense that he's obviously got a big following. Mm. But I, you know, I nothing but respect to the guy. I'm not going to badmouth him or anything like that. But just me talking facts, he's not on my level. You know, I'm supposed to be in the top 10 now, I believe. Obviously, I've been out for a year, so I think that if I wasn't out for a year, that I'd be close to a title shot now. But so be it. Shit happens. He's fighting the guy that I beat almost a year ago, so it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. But, you know, I can just tell from the interview he doesn't want to fight me. You know, I'm not bothered. I'm not calling him out or anything. But, you know, he was obviously saying to Katie, oh no, we're both prospects, it makes sense to build us up. And yeah, if you look at it like that, but from a fighter's perspective, I fight anyone who the UFC give me. You know, I want the guys that are ranked above me. But if Sean Shelby come up to me and said, I want you to fight a guy who's ranked a lot below you, so be it. I fight whoever the UFC give me. I'll never turn a name down. So, yeah, you know, I 100% don't think... I know that he does not want to fight me. You know, he's just... he obviously got asked the question and, you know, he wanted to come up with an excuse as far as I'm concerned.
Right. But I know if there was one fight that everybody was like really getting behind for you, it was obviously the Chito Vera fight. You've gone out and you've said, just send me the contract, I'll sign it. I know you have gone out of
another
your way
guy that doesn't want to fight me.
I mean, what is the
guy
story?
That doesn't fight me.
What is the story with him calling out Brett Johns now? I'm like, no, that's the wrong guy.
That's what I'm saying. I said the other day that in my eyes, he's calling out everyone but me. You know, he's trying to get anyone he can. He said the other day to Andre Yule, I think on Twitter, I saw that he would give him a rematch. Why? Why would you give Andre Yule a rematch? Do you know what I mean? He spoke all this shit about me. And, you know, to me, he just fought a guy that I fought over a year ago who I smashed in the distance. And, you know, to me, Andre Yule was getting him in the first.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, now he's calling out Brett Johns. Why are you calling out Brett Johns? You know, I've said that I'm game to fight. I said to him that I'm game to fight on the London card. And, you know, I don't obviously know if the UFC would have it, but why not come to London and be a potentially on the main card or co-main event or something? And, you know, with me coming off a fight with John Dodson, that makes sense. But, you know, I guess he doesn't want it.
It must be like I nearly didn't even want to ask you that because, I mean, I nearly ask you to every time. And it's like at this stage, you've said everything you possibly can to make it happen, right? Like, you know, it's like
mate,
the ball is completely in his court.
Until it comes down to fighting.
Yes.
So.
You brought it up there as well, Nathaniel. Like, I cannot wait for you to fight on a UFC London card. I mean, you are so synonymous with London to me. I think of you nearly immediately when I think of London. And it feels like you've mentioned it there that you would fight him in there. But, like, I mean, they've booked you so close to that card. It feels like there's no way in blue hell that you can make a fight on that card. But if it could happen, would you do it?
Oh, 100%. If provided I come out with no, as I call them, winner's injuries, I'm going to get on the mic and I'm going to say, Dana, please put me on that London card. You know, I'd rather not fight 5 weeks after a fight usually. But for London, mate, 100%. You know, I could come out, I keep my weight low, I'll already be fit as anything. So it's not hard to just maintain that. You know, I'd rather that and be fighting again 5 weeks after than them saying 9 weeks after, you know, because I'll come out and I might want to eat a bit and binge, then I put a bit of weight on and I have to juggle around. Whereas, you know, 5 weeks after, I'll come out, I'll carry on as exactly how I've been doing for the past 10 weeks. And yeah, you know, get to fight in my hometown again, which is always a dream.
Is it hard for you, like, when you're not on that card and you have to watch it? Like, you know, I'm sure it's like, you know, what the hell? You know, like, because you're, as I said, you're one of the most up-and-coming guys from England. Like, everybody's talking about you around Europe, never mind in the UK. Does it hurt when they're doing a hometown card and you're not on it?
It is a bit frustrating, you know, but I'm not too upset by it. You know, obviously, I know UFC have got to match people. John Dodson, I'm fighting in his hometown. You know, if they put everyone in their hometown, I guess there would never be many fights getting matched. So, you know, so be it. The UFC want me fighting Dodson in his hometown, I'll do that. But, you know, I'd like to still fight on that London card. And fingers crossed, if I get a good win this week and no injuries, you know, they'll give it to me.
Finally, Nathaniel, you know, we talked about the stoppage, etc. earlier on. Is there one thing in your head that keeps playing out how this fight will go with you and Dodson?
Yeah, I feel like usually he's a runner, but I feel like with him being in his hometown, you know, he's going to get overconfident. He's going to come forward and try and give it to me, which I think I'm just going to catch him. You know, I'm kind of going in my head of a second round TKO. But if I can get it done in one, then perfect.
And we're not going to be seeing Nathaniel Wood, the submission specialist, this weekend, you reckon? It's going to be the vintage puncher.
I'd like to think the knockout, but, you know, after a couple of minutes, he might be diving for a takedown. So, you know, if a submission's there, 100%, I'll take it. I'd like to get a 50 G's bonus again. Yeah, because I'm running out of money.
Nathaniel, thanks so much, man. You're a gentleman. I can't wait to see you back in there, mate.
Oh, you're welcome, and appreciate the call, mate, as always.
All the best, sir.
Cheers, mate. Speak to you soon.
And from one former Cage Warriors champion to another, we caught up with Ross Houston ahead of a huge week of headlines for him following his release from Cage Warriors and the vacation of his Cage Warriors welterweight title. It seems Ross is a flush with options, which we'd probably expect from any kind of Cage Warriors champion that becomes a free agent, but undefeated. His last fight was one of the fights of the year. I'd say it's a pretty good time to be Ross Houston. Let's have a word with Ross. We'll be back again in about 10 minutes or so. Love yous loads. And now I'm joined by one of the most talked about fighters in all of Europe, a former Cage Warriors champion, Ross Houston, who recently was released by the promotion and has vacated his title. He is one of the most talked about free agents in international MMA at the moment, Ross. How are you, first of all? It's been a long, long time, all the way since June of last year, I believe, when you fought Nicholas Dalby is the last time I talked to you. So it's a pleasure to speak to you again, my friend.
Yes, bro, man. Good to speak to you as well, man. I'm feeling good. I'm free, and I'm feeling good about the future, man. Got some big things planned.
That reaction was crazy, man. Like, I mean, I expected you to get a big reaction with an announcement like that, but even that bowled me over. Like, I mean, it felt like everybody was completely switched onto that story. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, to be honest. I knew there'd be a bit of a build-up because obviously I was being quite vague with my answers when people were asking what was next for me, you know, so I couldn't really go into it too much. People were kind of scratching their heads, maybe wondering why I hadn't fought in a while. It was a bit of a weight off my shoulders, to be honest, to get out in the open. And I'm glad, and I'm just feeling optimistic about the future. I'm just glad to be able to tell the fans, you know, that what's happened and that we're moving forward with things, because obviously these guys have supported me since the start and throughout my career, so I want to repay them with some more good scraps.
Amazing. Can you explain to us what happened? What prompted your decision to leave Cage Warriors? Like, a lot of people, you know, felt as though if you won one more fight, you'd be straight into the UFC. Was there a reason that you decided to leave at this point, or decided to part ways with the promotion?
Not really. You know, I'd like to go into more details, but I'm just gonna have to stick by the statement made by my manager. You know, we came to a mutual agreement and left on, I think it was amicable terms. So, yeah, man, we're moving forward, and, you know, I'm just going to concentrate on the future and I've achieved what I have in the past, and I'm feeling better than ever, man. I'm more hungry than ever, so bring on these top welterweights on the whole planet. Let's go.
Yes, yes, I understand that there has been NDAs signed there that sort of legally... Ross can't get into that as far as I know. But like, speaking about the future, because there is a huge future ahead of you here. And as your manager, Kadu, said in his statement when this announcement first came out, he said there was already three potential suitors trying to get your signature. Has anything been signed, sealed, and delivered yet, Ross? I mean, or are we still in the negotiation period? Are you still hearing all these offers pouring through? And is it still just three people, or is there even more now?
I think there might be more, to be honest. Yeah, it's a cool feeling. You know what? It's cool because obviously all them years back, I started MMA just as a bit of a hobby and all that, and it's just kind of over the fights, each fight that's gone through and over the years, it's kind of it's kind of spiraled and it's got bigger and bigger. And now I'm like, I'm hearing these promotions that are after me. And, we've got big promotions in America, in Asia, and Europe and all that after us, man. So, the Hitman's going into the show, and we've got some big targets on our site.
Is that what this is about for you? Like, are you going to try and establish yourself as an international mainstay? Like, even as we saw Brendan Loughnane recently going across and fighting for PFL. I'm not saying you're going to sign for the PFL or anything, but is that what you're trying to do? Like, basically put yourself on the international map, so to speak?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm one of you guys. I always like to be setting a challenge for myself, setting new goals. I'm not content with where I am at the moment. I've obviously got this world title under my belt, and now I'm looking at the next chapter and looking at some massive promotions. And I've got my eyes set on these titles. I want to feel like I've established myself. In my eyes, and the best welterweight in Europe just now. And I'm looking at these big names on the international scene, and that's the guys that I want, man. I don't want to kind of just be a mid-tier fighter, getting paid a bit of money. I want to be known as the top international welterweight out there, bit by bit, and scalp by scalp, I'll make my way up there. Yeah, so it's definitely I'm always just like striving to get to that next level. I'm not content with where I am right now, and there's going to be bigger and better things to come. I'm in my prime. I'm hungry. I'm motivated. I've got the fire in my belly again, and I'm just ready to go.
When I think about Black Panther Sports, I immediately think of Aaron Chalmers. I think of Fabian Edwards, two huge names, maybe the two biggest names that have come along with this Bellator European series. I know that isn't all of what Black Panther does. I know they have many relationships across many different promotions, but it always just seemed to me that the relationship with Bellator was a very strong one. Could that suggest that that could be the next port of call for you, or are the options still very open?
The options are open. Yeah, I haven't made my mind up about anything, to be honest. I'll just kind of like I said, consider what the opponents that have been offered to me, and the kind of like stage that they're able to put me on. So it's not going to be a financial decision. I'm looking to be put on the main events against the big names, and show what I'm capable of. I like to take gambles and all that. I would quite happily take fights with like some of the biggest names on the planet. If someone offered me, talking about Bellator, if someone offered me if I got offered someone like MVP, a big name, I'd take that fight in a heartbeat, and I know I'd smash him, because I'm not a taxi driver or a milkman, so if that name got given to me, I'd take it, Even if Douglas Lima got given to me, I've met like two types of people, kind of like, say you're training in the gym, and I don't know, Floyd Mayweather walks in the gym. I mean, there's two types of people. One type of person would kind of avoid training or sparring with that person because they don't want to get exposed, It's kind of like when you've got these phony black belts in jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And they don't roll with anyone because they don't want to get exposed. But then you've got these hungry people who try to, you know, a role or compete with these top people, you know, because it's kind of like, oh, I want to test myself, I want to see where I'm at, I want to test my character, you know, and that's exactly the same person I am. I want these big names, I'm not scared of anyone, and I'm confident in my skills and my mindset, so I'm literally looking for the biggest names that can be given to me. And whether people think, oh, you know, oh, he's got no chance to get this guy or that guy, man, I don't care, man, because I know I'm going to beat him. And that's all that matters, you know, because it's just me against this other person in the cage.
Man, you are making me so excited about a fight with you and MVP. I don't want to get too excited because we don't know where your next port of call is, but my word, that would be amazing, my friend.
Yeah, we can, if, you know, if that name gets put to me, man, we can make that happen. We can make that happen, you know. I've got a world title under my belt, you know, so he can, all these people, you know, saying that he can't beat legitimate opponents, there's a chance, man, in there against me, man. And, if it's the right offer and the right deal, and, you know, we've got the right kind of contract, you know, like I said, I haven't got anything, man. We've got several offers, and, you know, I like the Asian scene as well, man. You know, 1FC are doing class things over there. And it seems so fresh, you know, and I've heard nothing but good things about the promotion, looking after the fighters. And, you know, so far, I've loved my experiences so far. And I've fought places like, you know, Cardiff, Newport, and I love the Welsh guys. You know, I've made a lot of friends there. And Liverpool and London, man. But it'd be quite cool to fight over in Asia. I mean, a bit of sunshine whilst I'm getting hit in the head.
I was wondering, how did you feel about, you know, shortly after the announcement of your release, Cage Warriors released they put out a press release saying that Rhys McKee would fight for your old title in Belfast. Do you think that's a good choice? Do you think Rhys deserves a shot at that title?
Yeah, I think so. I think Rhys McKee and Adam Proctor, I'm not sure, I don't know if it's been announced yet, but I could see that fight happening.
That's
a great
fight, yeah.
They're the two top guys just now, and they're both cool guys. So I'm happy for Rhys, to be honest. You know, I bumped into him a few times, I spoke to him a few times. He's a cool dude, man, and he's young, man. That dude's a beast, you know. So he's got a bright future. As is Adam Proctor as well, you know. I've trained with Adam. He's an absolute savage as well. So them two guys have got bright futures, and I don't know what's happening and who Rhys is fighting, but I wish them guys the best. You know, I've got no bad feelings about my past. I've had some good experiences in my past promotions, and they've put me on the platform I am today, so let's move forward.
A final one, Ross, and I'm very interested. I'm very excited to see how this develops and where you go. But I'm just wondering, because of Cage Warriors' relationship with the UFC, and so many fighters have gone directly from Cage Warriors to UFC, if you get to the end of your career and you have never fought in the UFC, do you think you will regret this decision of leaving Cage Warriors at this time?
You know what? No, I've made my decision. I'll stand by it. I know I'll fight in the UFC at some point. You know, I'm just taking a different route. You know, I think fighting's fighting at the end of the day. Whether I fight, you know, in ABC or KFC, man, as long as I'm beating these good guys and continue to beat these good guys, man, the big promotions I've got to notice, you know. So I'll continue to scout out the biggest names and take out the biggest scalps. And I can only play the cards I'm dealt, to be honest, Pete. So the UFC offer wasn't there for me. And, you know, I've made my decision and I'm working from there. You know, I'm just a normal guy, you know, and I just want to keep active. And like I said, my main decision is looking to fight these bigger names. You know, so I fought Dalby in my last fight, so I want to fight a bigger name than Dalby, or at least on par, you know, and I'd work from there, man. So, you know, there would be a bit of resentment, not resentment, that's the wrong word.
Regret.
I would be a bit of regret. Yeah, not resentment, I'd say. A bit of regret if I'd been in the UFC, but I'm living my life, man. So whatever, I'll deal with things as they come. You know, you only live once.
Ross,
just have some fun, man. So let's go.
Absolutely, man. And thank you so much for doing this, Ross. I'm buzzing for you. I can't wait to see what's next. I really like that MVP fight. That was a very good pitch you made just there. So hopefully Scott Coker or one of the lads is listening to this and they can put that together for us.
Yeah, man, for sure. I'm ready. I think I'd do that guy. Well, let's change that. I know I'd do that guy, man.
Ross, thank you so much. I will speak to you soon, and I await the news with bated breath, my friend.
Perfect, brother. Right, yeah, you have a good one.
All the best, boy. Bye-bye. Well, great to hear from Ross Houston there. I have a feeling we're going to be hearing about something for him very, yeah, very soon, by the way he's talking. I want that MVP fight, man.
Yeah?
Well, I mean, like, he's right. You know, everyone's like, oh, this guy fights nobody. Ross was going to be signed, like, he was on the verge, as we know, knocking on the door of the UFC. If his first fight out of Cage Warriors is against MVP in London, that is huge. That is absolutely a massive, massive fight for him.
Yeah, Bellator, I'd be surprised if they did that.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be just, yeah, because they'd be getting rid of one of the draws nearly immediately if they were to sign him. You're full of beans, Niall.
No. I am. Just getting late, but it's going to be interesting what Houston does. Yeah, like, that's probably the obvious move would be to go to Bellator Fighting Championships.
Well, especially with his management. With
exactly.
Baby and Aaron, you know, a lot of other guys as well signed there. They have links.
I just don't like that fight straight off the bat. And I admire what he wants to do, go in there and have those big fights. But in terms of what Bellator do and what we've traditionally seen them do, you know, Michael Venom Page is a good example of that. You know, get a good bill behind you before they start eventually testing you out against you know, high level opposition and guys that would be a good matchup for the fans.
Do you know what I want? I'll tell you what I want. What I really, really want.
Cigar.
Roberto Saldich v. Ross Houston.
Yeah, I think that's exactly sort of similar sort of billing as MVP, that we're not going to see a fight like that, because
why wouldn't you see? KSW will throw you in the fucking blender.
No, I just don't think he's going to go to KSW. I'd be surprised if he
said
does.
It's a possibility.
Yeah, I'd say Bellator is probably the most realistic possibility.
Yeah, I think it probably. I don't know, but like, I mean, there's a few whispers going around that there's a one Asian promotion.
Yeah,
very
one championship first.
What? Sorry, you. Yeah. I was saying there's one Asian promotion.
Oh, right, okay, sorry.
I didn't mention any.
Oh, okay.
Don't
all
be
right.
Throwing that out there. But how was your week anyway?
Yeah, busy. Like, yeah, I didn't stay up for the fight. First time in a long time I haven't stayed up.
The John Jones fight.
No, I actually went to bed because I was up early. I had to be up early on Sunday. I was in late. I was knackered. And it was a quiet weekend. I had a couple of points on Friday, literally like four. Nothing worked in all weekend then. I got home late last night and watched the fights then. So
lovely jubbly.
Yeah, it was a shit weekend. I'm not going to lie to you. It wasn't great now. I'm dying for a few pints.
I went down to Skerry's to my cousin Tom's 21st. Happy birthday, Tom. Great to see all the family down there. Down there? Yeah, I guess. I don't know. No, up. I don't know. But yeah, knackered after all these interviews. Jesus, I am dying from
Yeah, we've had a busy day. The pair of us gone
Christ
back and forth.
Almighty,
since,
yeah.
It's 2 o'clock today, earlier even.
Yeah.
So yeah, listen, no, that was good. Ireland won the rugby. Amazing performance.
Yeah.
That was insane.
Yeah, that,
so we're going for a trip. We're going for the triple crown against
Why do they
the
make up names of things that aren't actually things?
They are.
Do they have a trophy
the triple
for the
crown.
Triple
yeah,
crown?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But why is that a thing within a thing?
Because it's fought out between the...
Wouldn't that be funny if, like, halfway through the Premier
Ireland
League, they gave someone a trophy, like, and they were like, well done, you're...
Well, they do that in, like, Brazil and stuff like that.
You're the midway champions.
Well, they do that in Brazil and stuff.
Rugby
in soccer.
An awful sport.
It's not an awful sport.
It's a ridiculous game.
Nah, it's not.
For wealthy clowns.
It was...
on steroids. Drugby. That's
Jesus
what I call
Christ,
it.
That's very deflammatory.
Yeah. Well, there you are. Right.
But no, it was good. Good weekend. I'm looking forward to just getting drunk. just...
Listen,
I don't know
that's
when.
All, that's
I,
all we've got. We've got
I,
the.
I'm not going to tonight now, but fucking hell, man! Look at my mouth. It's like watering for a pint of Guinness. You probably hear it in my voice. Ireland's fucked as well, by the way. Countries, nothing's going to change. It's probably going to be war again. I don't know. It's just
Jesus. Well, there you go. That's a Southside Dublin man view on Sinn Féin having a good.
No, it's
election.
Not. It's nothing to do with Sinn Féin. Just to say
it's
the
just
country.
You being
no, you know what's going to happen to war. I'm going to take over the country. There's going to be a military coup from Niall McGrath, a one man band.
Right. We've definitely had enough podcasting for today.
Yeah,
but
we're going insane.
Yeah. We'll see you next week. If we can keep this four guests stuff up, we'll try. But it's draining us.
We've a good guest line up for next week.
Oh. Hey, go on. I have to go. I'm going to fall asleep in this chair. Love yous loads. Mwah. Thanks to our lovely guests, Valentina Shevchenko,
European, Dublin's,
Liam McCourt, Ross Houston, and Nathaniel Wood. We love yous loads. It's not for casuals.
Get
Don't
out
be
my
a
studio.
Fucking casual.
Go home, Carl. Mwah.